Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Again, this Wednesday, as always, we have on with us psychosocial therapist Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands, who is back to discuss further discussions on the comparison between the U.S. penal system, mass incarceration, poor treatment of its incarcerated population, and lack of appropriate rehabilitation in comparison to her country and others. So we're going to let Mariam speak on these issues in a few minutes. I just wanted to let everyone know that we are in a time now where there is so much discussion on criminal justice reform. We have so many people working on it. A lot of the politicians, even in Massachusetts, have been actively involved in trying to make changes. Unfortunately, the United States has over 2.3 million people in prison, and it's unnecessary that these things should be taking place. As you listen to Mariam Jacobs, you will get a better understanding of why we need to make positive changes in reducing the penal system to let a lot of these people that are worthy of being released be released. And so now we will introduce Mariam Jacobs. And Mariam, are you on with us?
Yes, Leona, I am here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being on. As usual, we really appreciate your coming on, taking the time to come on and discuss these issues of importance. So, Mariam, can you talk a little bit about what you've been doing in your advocacy for the incarcerated, the work that you've been doing, the volunteer work that you've been doing, and also, before the end of the show, I'd like to hear more about the book. I'm hoping that it's going to be coming out soon. And I believe the last time you were on, you mentioned possibly in January, so we'll be looking forward to that.
Yes, I am Mariam Jacobs, and I live in the Netherlands. I work as a psychosocial therapist. I also am finishing my Master of Philosophy, which gives me the opportunity to dive deeper into subjects of life, and my subject of life is mass incarceration. So I wrote a book, and I also am writing my thesis now, and it's about mass incarceration in the United States. And in my research, I am trying to go deeper into what is happening and what kind of patterns are and elements are the foundation of the prison system. So I did a lot of research about it to come to an understanding of the whole picture of mass incarceration. In the Netherlands, I also work with incarcerated people in our prison system, which has another foundation. I find it important in my work as a psychosocial therapist to meet the human being behind the crime, because behind the crime, the healing has to take place before an incarcerated individual is able to take responsibility to get to insight in the crime, take responsibility and restore the harm that he has done. I also see that when an incarcerated individual has the opportunity to get insight in himself, insight in his crime, it also has a positive effect on the victim, and it has a positive effect on society. So it's only a win-win situation. And that's something else that we see in the United States. And that's very sad that this is happening too less in the United States. I finished my book. Yes, it's now going to be translated in English. It's written in language that's accessible for everybody, so you don't need to have gone through an academic study or whatever to be able to read it. And I work together with an artist who expresses the effects of mass incarceration in art. So reading my book will be reading on both rational level and the level of the heart.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I know others are as well. One of the things is I know that you must have heard recently also about the conflicting and controversial issues over the individual who had assassinated Robert Kennedy. And I believe his name was Sirhan. Sirhan. But there has been a lot of controversy over that. Apparently, there were family members who were very much in favor of releasing him. He was a young man, very young, at the time that he did the assassination. And he spent, I think it was 50 years or more. Well, you figure when Robert Kennedy passed away, this man has been in prison. He's now an old man. He went in when he was quite young. And there's been a lot of controversy over that. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up is because this is the problem we have in the United States. We have people who have been receiving life sentences and life without parole sentences for crimes that they've committed, many of them, when they were very, very young. And although many of the, some of the Kennedy family members want to see this man free, they feel as though he's been in long enough, that he has paid his dues. And it surprised me because the Kennedys were a family that my whole family have always respected. My father and my mother, I was going to give them an anniversary party on November 22nd because it was my father's birthday and it was my mother and father's anniversary. I remember getting on the school bus, coming home that day and hearing on the news that the John F. Kennedy had passed away, that was assassinated. And when I got home, my entire family and everyone in the neighborhood was crying because he was assassinated. And I had planned on giving them the surprise party the following year because of this, but unfortunately my father passed away on Mother's Day, so I never got to do that either. But the reason I bring this up is that we have, and there were many that said, you know, it's not up to the Kennedys to decide whether or not this man should be free because he was, you know, he was pretty much running for the presidency or had just been elected. It's they felt it was the country's decision. And as you mentioned in prior times, this country is based on revenge and retaliation. And it really surprised me that there would be so much controversy over this because, I've always respected the Kennedys. And if they feel that this man is not worthy to be free, then that means they probably feel the same way about all prisoners. And again, I bring this up because prisoners should not be stereotyped. Prisoners should be it should be based on the situation at the time. It should be based on the considering what the person was going through at the time. And a lot of times, young people, their whole decisions as to how they do things and what they do is based on adults. And we live in a country where the adults are teaching their kids hatred. They're teaching their kids racism. They're teaching their children so many different things that these kids are growing up, they're listening to these adults, and they're growing up to do exactly what these adults probably want to do themselves if they haven't already done it. So this is why I want people to know, the audience, if you can share this worldwide, let people know that these crimes that are committed, a lot of them are based on their teachings, the bringing up that they've had, what they have listened to the parents talk about day in and day out when they're at the kitchen table, if they sit at a kitchen table. We need to start being role models for our young people. And if we're not, we cannot blame them 50 years or 60 years later for a crime they committed because of something that they learned at home or that they learned in the communities, that they learned from people that do not have the right to be hating. And I just wanted to bring that up. And Mariam, I'm sorry to interfere with your discussion because that was important to me. And I'm going to let you go back to what you were talking about.
Yes, I would like to respond to it because it has a lot of issues, this example. It might be an example for a lot of similar situations. First of all, this shows that a life sentence only can serve revenge and hatred, because locking up somebody for the rest of his life for the crime that he has committed, there's no rehabilitation to be found in that. So that's an example of that rehabilitation is absent. I think the only reason for somebody to receive a life sentence is when that person has proven to maintain being dangerous for society, and it means that a person like that has to be examined by a sociologist or psychiatrist from time to time to check if somebody has gone through rehabilitation or is not able to rehabilitate, because sometimes that can happen. So I think a life sentence in the United States is based on this revenge and this endless punishment. While in the Netherlands, we also do have, we only have 25 people with a life sentence. But every couple of years, that person is examined by a psychiatrist, gets rehabilitation programs. If he can rehabilitate, then the situation changes. If he is not able to rehabilitate, then that's a good reason to keep somebody in prison. But the difference between our countries here in the northern of Europe and I think many other countries and the United States is that in the United States, it's not the person who is punished but the crime. Now, the problem with that is the crime cannot be undone. You cannot take back what you did. You only can restore what you did by going for rehabilitation, learn how to feel responsibility, empathy, and feel sorrow for the victim from the heart, not just in words. But because in the United States only the crime is punished and only the human being does not count, is not taken into account, which is for me the first step of dehumanization, you have these sentences which are based on an endless way of punishment, because this man that killed Kennedy, the crime is still accurate, is still there. Kennedy cannot be brought to life anymore. This man has changed. This man is no longer a danger, but nobody is looking at this man. They are only looking at the crime, at the crime, at the crime. So that means that when you are incarcerated, you don't have a chance to rehabilitate. And that's a very huge mistake, a very huge, a very wrong perspective when people are judged after committing a crime, because you don't have a chance for rehabilitation despite programs that might be there. And that's one of the reasons that you have mass incarceration.
I will say, Ted Kennedy, I admire him. And I know, unfortunately, he's no longer with us. But I remember years ago, he was actually going to try to help in a situation with my loved one. And I really respected him all those years for that. And fortunately, the lawyers were the ones that messed up, because he had given some paperwork for the lawyers to help the individual with, and they never gave the individual that information. So it's almost as though we have so much corruption and so many things going on in this country where they actually go over someone's head to deprive these people of getting it. But I have to say, with Ted Kennedy, I really respected him, and I respected that entire family of the older ones that I knew of, because we grew up only 7 miles, 6 or 7 miles from the Kennedy compound, and Ted Kennedy used to come to the villa, which was a club that we had at the end of our street. And so there was meaning behind all that. And I say this again to let people know, and even the Kennedys that are in disagreement with this, allowing this person to have a second chance, I say this because, first of all, the Kennedys were a strict Catholic family, and they were well-respected. And to have that kind of hatred that they don't want to see somebody released, and I know their loved one, you know, is somebody that meant a lot to them, but we're talking about years and years ago, and people do change, as you mentioned, and I'm hoping that they haven't changed in the compassion that they used to have for others. And this is a very controversial issue, and I've been hearing a lot about it on the news especially, and we know the media will continue this and continue this and continue this because it's drawing attention to the media, not the person or the people involved.
Well, I think what I said, you know, what you encounter with lawyers and how lawyers and other people who are involved with incarceration, how they act, and also what you say about psychiatrists, psychologists who get money from the government but do nothing, that's all part of the fact that the human being is not taken into account. You all
exactly.
Can we? It's only the crime. You know, there aren't, in a lot of people's eyes, there are not 2.3 million people incarcerated, but 2.3 million crimes. And that's a huge difference with huge consequences. Because if you start dehumanizing with denying the human being behind the crime before he has been convicted already, because that's where dehumanization already starts, then it doesn't matter what you do with these people in prison because they are not human. And that's the big danger. It doesn't matter. So the problems that you experience with your loved one fit this view. Your loved one is for you a human being, but in the eyes of the system, it's only a crime. And that crime has to be punished over and over again. And a human being is not there in their eyes. And that's the danger of this way of approaching people who have committed a crime.
Exactly. And you know, the sad...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you sometimes also ask about the comparisons between United States and, for instance, the Netherlands. This is, I think, one of the big differences. In our country, it's the human being that gets a sentence, which means that the sentence can change and that there is that the human being is still there and that he gets rehabilitated because he's worth being rehabilitated.
Exactly. And you mentioned the corporations, which is a major problem. But I go back to also the epidemic that we have in this country of mental illnesses and also addictions. And one of the things is, and I want to bring this up in case anyone is interested, because I invited Jean Brewster to come on the show today as well. She's doing a lot with mental illnesses as well. And apparently it was, and she had mentioned it would probably be short notice because she's getting prepared for a lot of these things. But she does want to come on at some point as when you're on as well. But Jean Brewster is doing some online training as well as in-person training on mental illnesses, and she's offering these classes for free to anyone interested. And if anyone is interested in either the classes, and they also give not only certificates local, but they also give national certificates at the end of the programs. One of them is starting from September 13th and again on September 15th. And it will be from 9 to 1 p.m. Eastern. But Jane's number is 617-828-7340 for anyone that's interested in taking these classes that are free, and it will be on mental illnesses in the United States. So these, we speak of this often, and this is why I say this. And again, Mariam, Jean was very anxious and excited to know about you, and she does want to come on sometimes to meet you on the radio show, and also so that she might be able to contribute to some of this too. But we do have to get these American Psychological, American Psychiatric, and American Medical even to association to get involved in some of these discussions, get involved in some of the work that's being done, you know, in the prisons, because what we need is independent. We need people from the outside to go in to work with these people because they're not getting the treatment, the appropriate treatment or rehabilitation that they can be getting from outside affiliates, outside independent providers on the outside. And Mariam, I want to ask you to talk a little bit about the volunteer work that you've been doing in the prison, because this gives you an idea of exactly what is or what is not being done to help these prisoners.
Well, the work that I am doing in the prisons is, in fact, I work as a psychosocial therapist in the prison, and I go through this process, which I call deeper justice. So it means that the incarcerated individual is gets the opportunity to do deeper justice to himself, to what has happened in his life, in his youth, all the issues that have led to the crime. I help him to get to self-insight in why he committed the crime, what happened, who he was during committing the crime, what happened afterwards. And I see people heal. I see that they come to an understanding. And I think that's the only way to be able to restore. But it starts with seeing the human being behind the crime. That's so crucial. That's why I also mentioned whether you convict a crime or the human being who committed the crime. I think a lot of problems, what you see in the United States, is that it is a corporal state. I mentioned to you in private once to listen to Chris Hedges, a very interesting critic. He's American. He comes from New Jersey. He has all kinds of lectures and meetings on YouTube, and he also teaches in prisons. And he is very insightful when you want to understand why you have mass incarcerations, and he explains how corporal power has this influence of locking people up, whether they are innocent or not, the games that are played. There's a lot of manipulation involved. There is a very tight connection between politics and corporal power. Even television networks, radio networks, they are owned by corporations. So people who watch television, the news, or who listen it, are already, and social media is influenced by this corporal power. And this is also huge, and he explains it very well. He's very interesting to look at, to watch. He fights for change, and as I said, he knows the prison system because he teaches in this prison. For instance, he explains that a lot of his students would not have been incarcerated now if it was not for what Bill Clinton did during his presidency. So he knows a lot about the politics. And he also says, and that's very sad to hear, but I believe it, that what you see now, politicians, politics is not there for the people. They are only there for the corporations. There is no social foundation for people. Healthcare is very hard to reach. It's very expensive. Minimum wages are very below what should be. Young people who want to study have already large loans. So it is very hard to develop yourself in your country, which means there is a whole level of people who cannot reach a study, who cannot reach health, and all that. And it all contributes to people who become homeless and who get into criminality and end up in prison. It's all wired. It's all connected. And that's, I think, the main reason why you have mass incarceration. And as we know, is the prison system in itself is a corporal power in itself. So bodies are used for corporal power. But the people in the streets have to realize that they also are commodities for corporal power and the wealthy class, because you have a class society. You are really a class society. You know, things like racism, for the people in the street, racism is a huge problem. For corporal power, racism is a tool to conquer and divide, because for as long people in the streets fight each other, they cannot form one force against this corporal power. That's one of the games of manipulation, and people have to become aware of that, that all of them are used.
One of the things I know, and you mentioned politicians, I notice that politicians around election time especially, they want to do so much. And you mentioned Bill Clinton as far as doing damage, actually preventing the things that everyone, the criminal justice reform and everything else. It's not just Bill Clinton. I've also heard from the incarcerated, it's also been even Kamala Harris, who is now the Vice President of the United States. But they mentioned certain politicians, certain legislative members throughout the country who have been a problem, and now all of a sudden they change back and forth. Now they say that, you know, they're for eliminating mass incarceration, but at the same time I don't see them doing much about it. Some of these politicians that are actually going in to meet with the incarcerated individuals, they promise the world, but they don't deliver. And it's all about just being able to make a one-time event make them look good. And I don't believe in politicians that lie. I don't believe in politicians that can't keep their word. And this is what we have in the United States, is too many people around election time are willing to do anything to make themselves look good, and too many lawyers and others are too busy trying to get in the media and the limelight to do the jobs that they're supposed to be doing, and that is to help the incarcerated individuals who are having serious, serious issues, either with their post-conviction or their civil rights being violated, or even the so many that are committing suicide. We have a high rate of suicide in this country. But these are issues that these people, like you mentioned, with the Clintons and Bill Clinton and also others that claim now they want to make changes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think the United States has come into a time that it doesn't matter anymore whether you are left or right, whether you are Democratic or a Republican. The explanation, what I heard, was that, you know, you could say now that Democratic Party has become a right party, and the Republicans have become an extreme right party. There is no left party like we have here, for instance, in the Netherlands. So what I see, in a way, is that people, common people who have to work hard for their money, for, you know, to get food on the table, etc., they are abandoned by both parties.
Exactly.
Nobody in politics stands up for these people. And what you get then, if people are abandoned and they are not helped and they have not access to healthcare and they get homeless and all these problems, then you get riots and then you get criminality. I mean, if you look at Norway, where the crime rate is very, very low, there you see that education is free. Nobody needs to pay for education. Tax money, so people do pay tax money, and the tax money is going back to the communities. For instance, this free education, which means that on the whole, whether people are rich or poor, everybody has the opportunity to get good education. That is linked to the fact that the crime rate is very low. So what you see in Norway and in the Netherlands, we do have to pay for education, but it's very highly subsidized. So we accept that we pay more tax money, and that tax money is going to education and to healthcare and to other social things that everybody needs. So we pay tax money, but the money is going back into the communities, and it serves everybody, because in my community there are more people who are able to have a good education or who stay healthy, because if they have issues they can have access to a hospital, they don't get all these bills afterwards. Then I am safe, you know, in my community, because the crime rate in my community is low. So that's all connected, you know, to each other. But in your country, people are abandoned by the government, and that's really sad. And that is because the government is in favor of the corporations. So a lot of tax money is going to the military. You always have these endless way of fighting wars, like what you have now, the last war, maybe it was the last one now, was in Afghanistan. Trillions of dollars went to Afghanistan and nothing has changed. Afghanistan is broken. There is no democracy in Afghanistan. So you lost all that money that you better could have put in about better health care or more access to health care, a better prison system and all that. So you pay a lot of money for all these endless wars on the other side of the ocean, which, you know, is useless, in fact, for you as a country. And it's going to all these rich people, the wealthy people, the high class. That's where you pay tax money for people to get even more rich, more wealthy, a Bezos who can go to the moon for an hour or something for how many millions, because Amazon doesn't pay any taxes, you know. Those are the big mistakes in your country. And that's why you have mass incarceration, and that's why you have lawyers and other people who promise a lot of beautiful things but do nothing because they get paid, and that's enough.
Jeez. I really appreciate you bringing this up about them going up to the moon and, I mean, up to the space and everything, because when I hear about the monies that they put into it, just for fun, they have to be so wealthy to be able to take an 11-minute trip to space and spend billions to take that 11 just for the thrill of it, when here we have people all over the world who are starving, who have no shelter, no food, no clothing, and here we have wealthy people, as you mentioned. But I wanted you to go just a little bit more into, in your country, in other countries as well, you mentioned that everything is paid for, the education and everything else. Can you just expand on that a little bit more? I missed some of it, but just a little bit of more information on that area.
Well, what I think is what you miss in the United States is a social foundation. When I am very ill and I have to go to the hospital and I have to get very expensive treatments, I don't get any bill. I don't need to pay for that. It's paid for. I don't need to worry that I get sick and cannot pay bills. It's not there.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. So many people in this country can't afford it.
And the thing is, the problem is, you say it's awesome, but in fact, it's normal. Because even Canada has it, and other countries have it. I think United States is one of the few countries, and maybe almost the one country in the West, in the democratic West, who doesn't have the social foundation. And that's where mass incarceration is part of, because if my kids have to be afraid of getting sick because I could not pay the bills, or if my kids cannot follow an education because I cannot afford it. If I have to work three jobs for minimum wages, which is far below what it should be, then the chance is much bigger that one of my kids will end up in criminality, because burglary, getting money, or, you know, taking drugs or alcohol, you know, to forget your issues, these issues, it's not so strange that people do that, because they are not secured. They are not safe in their own foundation. And I mean with the own foundation, a roof on your head, food on the table, your kids can go to school and choose the education they want to choose. If I have to stay awake at night because I'm afraid to get sick and I cannot pay the bills, that's very unsafe. And that's, for a lot of people in your country, that's the case. So, yes, they take their drugs. Yes, they might steal from shops. Yes, they might grasp alcohol, do stupid things, because maybe they are not so stupid if you look at the circumstances.
Yes.
And that's
and you know what I hear. I hear a lot of times from when a crime happens in a well-to-do neighborhood or with people prominent backgrounds, I hear a lot of times, well, you know, and somebody commits a crime that they know, and they say, well, you know, it was his first offense. He never was in trouble before. This doesn't happen in our neighborhood. You know, they defend this person. And I hear that so many times, and it really upsets me because the person has some kind of political influence or they have some kind of connections to the community or to whatever. And even in law enforcement or in as lawyers or whatever. There was an incident that happened on Cape Cod 29 years ago, and there were three things that happened around the same time, within months apart. There was a young man who was a four-year biology major in college that fired one shot, one fatal shot, at a time when he was severely depressed. There was in Buzzards Bay on Cape Cod, there was a military person. He was, I believe, in the... I forgot what the name of it was, but he was a military student, and he had fatally wounded somebody. And then there was a school teacher that set his house on fire, and apparently his family was caught in the fire. These were the three things that happened on Cape Cod when there had never been, or there was for years and years, decades, there had never been any crime. So all of these three, and then it turned out there was a lawyer who had a daughter who stabbed her husband 17, I believe it was 17 times. But that lawyer, because he was prominent from the Cape, and she was from a long line of judges, that they said that they were putting her in a psychiatric ward to be evaluated. That was the last that was heard of her. I won't mention her name, but you can go on the internet and type her name in, and it's nowhere to be found. Her father is no longer on the Cape, but apparently is practicing in New York. So this is how simple it is to cover up fatalities depending on the status of the family. And it really bothers me.
Yeah, but that's also an expression of this class society.
Exactly.
That's one of the, yeah, in those examples you see that that the United States is a class society. That's the same as the, you know, well-known stories about in the 80s or 90s it was the crack was, when somebody was caught with crack, you got a long sentence, but if you were caught with white powder cocaine, which, you know, crack is also cocaine, it's the same drug, it's only differently processed. And when you had the white powder cocaine, then you hardly got a sentence, or it was very light. Why? Because white powder was in the rich neighborhoods, the white class, and the crack cocaine was in the black communities. So there was a difference in sentencing. Then you see also, that's another example of the class society. And the people of the lower classes and the middle classes, they serve, they are all servants of the high class and the corporations. And the politics is influenced by that. It works together.
Exactly.
And that makes it so difficult. And that's why I think when you look at the prison population, the whole prison population, that you have a mix, you know, there's only affect a part of this population who actually, on a classical way, did commit a crime and received a sentence, like we have here in the Netherlands. A very huge part committed a crime while they were suffering from trauma or a disorder. There is another part that is innocent, but they could not afford a bail, so they had to do a plea bargain, which is, in fact, manipulation too. That plea bargain is, for me, so crazy, because somebody gets a sentence and he never has seen court.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a part which is innocent. There is a part that belongs in a forensic psychiatric hospital. And there is another part that, you know, should be in a nursing home because they are elderly people in wheelchairs who cannot walk anymore and whatever. But they are all put together in these prisons because that's making money. a psychiatric hospital costs money. Prisons gives money. Nursery homes cost money. Prisons give money. And in also in this, you see that money, tax money, is not going back to communities, but it's going to corporations, military, and wealthy class. Because if tax money would go back into communities, when tax money would serve the communities, you would have psychiatric hospitals, you would have nursery homes for elderly people who are incarcerated. You would not have a bail system. In the whole world, it's only the Philippines and the United States who have a bail bond system. All other countries don't have a bail bond system. You would not have plea bargain. So all these elements show that you are living not in a democracy, you are living in a corporal state, and you are serving the money, the god of the money, the mammon. And the Bible says you cannot serve God and the mammon. So on Sunday, everybody is praying in church and they pray to God. And from Monday to Saturday, they pray to the mammon.
Yeah. And in your version, the mammon is the evil one. And
the
that's
mammon
exact-
is... No, yeah, in the Bible, the mammon is the god of the money, of the materials, of the money.
Oh.
That's the mammon in the Bible.
But you're right about all that, and you know, and I'll tell you, and unless it hits home to the legislative members, or unless it hits home to the wealthy, they don't have a clue of what's going on. But the thing is, unless it hits home, they are totally against giving an individual a second chance. They are totally against it. But if it happens in their home, just like, and I have great respect for the GLBTs. I have great respect to them. I have a lot of friends that are. But one of the things is I noticed it wasn't until some of these political leaders, even a former governor, who had a loved one that was, and then all of a sudden, it shot. It went off. Everything was. Everybody was for it. Well, if everybody's for it, then let everybody be for it before that happens, because
exactly.
we don't have the right to judge, because we all have issues. But when it comes to something like that, just like you mentioned, weed, drugs. How many people are in prison for substance abuse when, in fact, all these now the people are legitimizing weed. Marijuana, all of a sudden, it's okay. So what happens to these people that have been in prison all these years for marijuana usage and something that might have happened as a result, or for other drug issues? This
yeah,
is what I'm saying. Now, a lot of this is coming out now, whereas at one time, it was not even heard of, but now it's happening because we're getting a lot of political leaders who are young. We're getting a lot of political leaders have children who are probably getting involved in stuff like that, and now all of a sudden it's becoming less important.
Exactly. So you have, that's a proof that you have a lot of lost life in the system, and that's something to be ashamed of. It's so awful, so painful. They lost their lives for
yeah.
nothing, just for nothing, and that's the whole thing. Because, but the problem is, the prisons have to stay full because, you know, a lot of money is involved with it. And another thing what I find very disrupting is, and very concerning is, that's what I wanted to say concerning, is we know that the militarized police in the streets are oppressive, and there is a lot of control in communities from the militarized police. But what shocked me was in the Dutch news, I read about this new law for abortion in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Another.
Yeah. The critics about that, what I read was about the women. Women do have not a choice, the freedom to choose for their own body, what they want to do. But what I found even more, or at least as much concerning, was if you try to help somebody who wants to have an abortion, then another person can turn you in, and then you have to pay that person who has been a snitch on you. So if you have somebody who wants an abortion, and you tell me about it, and you are going to bring that person to the hospital, then I can go to the police and I can snitch on you, and then you have to pay me $10,000. That's very dangerous, because people now are going to learn how to control each other and how to snitch on each other, because it's rewarded with money. So what you see in the prison, this huge control of guards over prisoners, is now extended to community in this law, with this law. That's dangerous.
It's crazy. It really is. You know what I see happening, though, is in the United States, is this, they're trying to get control over women. But and I notice in Afghanistan right now, the women are really becoming aggressive themselves, or assertive, and getting their rights. And in this country, a lot of women are, I guess they had been inspired by these women in Afghanistan, has been inspired by the women in this country, because they see the women taking a stand. And they're doing the same thing now where they are, which is dangerous for them, because we know in the Middle East that women have, for years, have not had that kind of control.
Yeah, but I think what I find more concerning is that when somebody can snitch on another person and turn him in, and he gets rewarded for turning that other person in, then it teaches people to control each other, and that's dangerous.
And that's what I was just going to expand on, mention, too, when you mentioned that, because this whole entire thing about snitching, about getting involved in other people's business, no one, even the government, should not have any control over a woman or anybody's issue when it comes to something like that. This is between man and God, women and God, not others. And these very people that are being so judgmental and trying to make so many changes to prevent it, they need to focus on their own families and their own lives. And I think what happens in this country is so many people are getting into everybody else's business so that they don't have to deal with their own issues. We have a serious issue in this country. Look what they did in, Afghanistan. This is, I was listening to CNN when they were talking about how they trained the Afghanistans to fight their own battle. But yet they said that the U.S. troops did all the work. So they taught them verbally, but they didn't teach them physically. And so when they left, people knew verbally, they knew orally how to defend themselves, but they never had the hands-on training. So here they are wondering, now what do we do? And this is what the United States did. And they promised them that when they came back, they were going to protect these people. So what kind of does that make us look like in this country? We not only lied, which is a lot of times being done in this country, not only to people in other countries, but to their own American citizens they're lying to. Look what they do when they put them in prison. All of a sudden now, they're citizens of the United States. All of a sudden, these people can't vote. This country is so dysfunctional, it's so ignorant, and it's so unintelligible. They don't know what they're doing. They think they do because they're a powerful country. And their power comes from a long time ago, respect, because it was called the United States, because everyone in this country was united, the representatives from every country in the world. But the United States believed that it was because of the power they had. And they might have had it then, but China has it now. But it's sad because if they would just let people individually decide whether they want to abort or not, that's one problem less that we'd have to worry about in this country, because this country has so many issues it needs to deal with. And President Biden should have focused on the United States of America and getting everything back to normal from all the chaos that went through before he became president, rather than to try to get involved again in another country.
Yeah, exactly. There is so much, because what I have this feeling that the United States is in decline, to be honest.
Is.
And
it is.
What you see happening in Texas, it is like Afghanistan itself when it comes to women. And it leads to dangerous situations, because if poor people have to snitch on their family members or the best friends or the neighbors because they don't have food on the table, what kind of situation is somebody going to get in? So there will be so many new problems created by this for the women, but also for people who try to help and get turned in and have to pay, and people who try to get money out of it, who try to snitch on other people because they are poor, they need money, and they are going to do that. You know, it sounds a little bit like, you know, like a war. In a war, you are careful, and in a war, you cannot trust anybody. You don't know who is your friend or your enemy, and this sounds a little bit the same. I think it would be horrifying when I have to think about a situation where I cannot trust my neighbors anymore because, well, maybe they might turn me into something.
Yes.
And
that's
scary.
The problems we already have. It just escalates the problems that we already have in this country. And we need to stop getting into everyone else's business and focus on what's happening in this country, but not focusing on the people in this country when it comes to their medical, what they decide they want to do. It shouldn't affect people. You know, I just feel so disappointed in the United States of America, the country I was born and raised in. I feel so disappointed in the way things have gone, because people in leadership have gone off into different directions. Instead of them all working same thing in stabilizing the United States, they're working on all different issues. There's so many coalitions out there working on different issues. If they would all join forces and work on one issue, and that, first of all, would be to end life without parole sentencing, end life sentences, and focus on keeping up with other countries in the sentencing that they're doing, and the recidivism rates in all of those countries, including your own, are very low to nothing.
Yeah, I think, you know, people have to start to take care for each other. And I think the government should, but I don't think it's going to happen quickly, the government should take care of its own people instead of interfere with other countries, as you said. But I think change only can come from the people who suffer from this decline. They know what it means to be incarcerated or having been incarcerated or being homeless or being hungry or being sick. Those people should unite and form one force against this corporal power, because the government is not going to change. The government earns too much money. So the power has to come from the communities who are fed up with being treated like commodities for the rich ones and the corporal ones. They have to end the class society, and they have to recognize that their own fight for, like, color to color is only a game for corporations. It's only, you know, this manipulation, it's only a tool. Racism is only a tool to divide and conquer. And for as long people stay divided, there will be no change. People have to unite and stand up, and they can do it because they are a huge force. They are a huge power.
It actually says in the Bible that man, money is the root of all evil, that man is going to destroy man because of that. And that's exactly what's been happening. This country is so bent on getting money and power that their hearts are hardened. They don't have that compassion. They don't have the understanding. They don't even try to find out. They don't try to find out.
No, and, you know, it leads to so many problems. You know, for us it leads to this mass incarceration that we are attached to and that we try to understand, but it also leads to all the other issues that we have talked about. But what to think about the environmental problems, which are huge, and we are in the middle of it. There are also reports that say in the 50s we cannot live here as a species no more. We are already in that decline as a world because of corporal corporations who don't care about the earth, about the environment, about human beings. They don't feel the consequences. They are only focused on making money for the stockholders. That's their own goal. And they don't understand that when everything collapses, they collapse too, but then it's too late. And we are already in that process. It's not coming. We are in it. And that shocked me when I read all these reports from scientists, etc. And it shocks me. It really does. It shocks me because I do have children and I want my children to live in this world, but I don't know if that's possible, to be honest.
The sad thing is that, again, it goes back to the bringing up. And I'll tell you, there have been so many people who have been stumbled by others who were raised to hate, raised to deceive, raised to be corrupt, and raised to be deceptive and lying. And I can't even blame these young people for doing these things, for causing the stumbling or for doing anything wrong, because their parents taught them this. And, you know, a lot of these kids today, they know they can get away with things because, going back to what you were saying, they come from prominent backgrounds. They come from wealthy homes. But they don't have – when you see a wealthy home, you don't see the love, because most times they have nannies, they have people taking care of their kids while they're off at, on social affairs. So these kids are growing up not learning love from their parents, but going out and trying to find people that they can hang out with to get that support they're not getting at home. A lot of these kids they're retaliating against their parents. They're trying to get the attention of their parents, and a lot of innocent people end up going to prison because of something that some others taught to do or not getting that attention are going to go out and do these things. So I would advise parents to spend time with your kids, to show them love, to listen to them when they have something wrong with them, to teach them understanding. We're living in a country now that it's way out of whack. And these kids, these gang members out there, they weren't born to be gang members. They weren't born to be gang members. They became gang members because they were searching for something. And the only ones that were there to give them that support were those that were also seeking support. So they come together, and they still have all this frustration and anger in them. So they're going out to destroy the ones that are, they feel are the people that have let them down, that have destroyed them.
Yeah. And then you see that it's a pattern of, you know, endless circles. And, you know, the circles have to be broken because your country is in a decline. It is really changing.
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder if it was ever anything but declining, because it's like you say, with money and with power and with fame, that's how these kids are being taught, these kids in wealthy homes. They don't know what it's like to be a normal child. But I just hope that the parents will learn. Mariam, we have a couple of minutes left. So, again, can you talk a little bit about your book and let everybody know where that's at? And hopefully we can pick up on some of this next Wednesday at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, we'll keep it short because time is almost running out. My book is finished. It's now in translation, and I hope to publish it both in the Netherlands and in the United States in January. And what I try to do, and I hope I can manage to do that, is that I can send free copies to incarcerated people in prisons, because it explains their situations, and I believe that they have the right to understand, really, to understand where they are a victim of, and that's of that system. The book is about a deconstruction in this, of the system, but also an explanation of how it reflects society and how it's a part of the society.
Sorry, go ahead.
And the title will be Loss in the System, a deconstruction of the United States prison system. That's what I wanted to add.
That was one other thing I wanted to bring up real quickly, is I notice on like CNN and MSNBC and all these Fox News, when they bring all these authors on that have these books that they've written, they're promoting these authors with their books. Another thing, this is corporate. They promote these people with their books when these books are all about everything we see on the news. Now, when it comes to authors like yourself talking about some major issues and some really that apply to everybody, not only the incarcerated but the people in the communities, the schools, everything. Now, you should be on some of these stations. You should be on some of these shows because what your book is about is something that that's going to affect every single one of us.
Yeah, but I think in the most news centers it will not be allowed because the news centers are also owned and influenced by the corporations. That's what I also recommend to everybody who is listening now. Go to YouTube, listen to Chris Hedges if you want to understand what mass incarceration is, where your loved one is. If you want to understand what's happening in your country, listen to him. He is not allowed anymore to in these shows because he is against the corporal state. But he's very clear, crystal clear in what he sees, what he writes about. He's a very smart person. And he teaches in prisons. I love that. So he's really, really interesting.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, and I had watched the YouTube. I watched him, and he thinks and talks a lot like what you're doing. He's almost like the both of you are simultaneously talking about the same issues and the same things going on. But again, next Wednesday at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Mariam Jacobs, I want to thank you once again for being on with us, and we are now going to be closing down. Thank you so much, Mariam.
You're welcome. Thank you, too.